Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway, and I'm John Huckenberry. And 10 years ago or so, I and some spectacularly gifted radio producers started a program that was dedicated to the idea that though far from power, we in public media could mobilize the power of knowledge and thinking and deep conversation to make people more engaged in this American democracy. Take this issue from the Obama years.
We know that even as we imprison more people of all races than any nation in the world, an African-American child is roughly five times as likely as a white child to see the inside of a prison.
And now the very different era we're in these days.
When you see these thugs being thrown into the back of a paddy wagon, you just see them thrown in, rough. I said, please don't be too nice. Like when you guys put somebody in the car and you're protecting their head, you know, the way you put their hand over. Like, don't hit their head and they've just killed somebody, don't hit their head. I said, you can take the hand away, okay?
Two presidents with very different ideas in this case about the U.S. criminal justice system. As we put this program together each day and hear your voices in our national conversation, we are dedicated to this idea that knowledge and deep thinking are powerful forces for change. And as part of my last week being the facilitator of this experiment in public media's contribution to democracy, we're going to return to this issue of the U.S. criminal justice system.
I think many people do not know that the United States, 5% of the world's population we have here, but yet we have almost 25% of the world's prisoners.
Right now, our sentencing laws are actually not based on public safety. They're based on what people guessed would be an appropriate punishment.
What we're seeing, you know, we have approximately just under 29,000 inmates who are refusing state-issued meals, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're not eating.
Policymakers on both sides of the aisle are realizing that there are more effective and less expensive ways to deal with nonviolent offenders.
Voices from our extensive coverage of this issue on The Takeaway. Almost, while we weren't looking, although in some communities there was nothing else to look at, our prison system and criminal justice system have become an unsustainable circus of plea bargains, jail time, waiting for trials, excessive sentencing, a racially targeted system of incarceration, at least in effect, if not always in intent. It has taken big ideas and the boldness of policymakers free of political handcuffs to look at real reform and to try to get the U.S. system on a reform track. The Vera Institute has embarked on a national experiment to re-examine mass incarceration in this country and its failings, with the aim to find solutions and to produce an action plan. Nicholas Turner is president and director of the Vera Institute of Justice, and he explains how it took a trip to, of all places, Germany, to see an enlightened justice system in action to stimulate an active rethinking of the prison system in the United States.
Life in prison in Germany is made to look as much as possible as life on the outside because of the recognition that people will have to succeed on the outside. So there's a real commitment to autonomy. There's a real commitment to sort of the normalization of process, to solving problems in a way that you would solve them on the outside. People wear their own clothes. They are called their names. They're not called a number. They're able to cook. They're able to decorate their cells, which really should be called rooms. They have keys to their rooms. I mean, so there's a respect for privacy. And
that's at all level of crime, violent crime.
Yes.
And really.
Yes. And that the levels of violence were very low in the facilities, and the level of positive problem-solving interaction between the security officials and the people who were locked up was remarkable.
Hmm.
And so that was very eye-opening.
That is amazing. So there's a strong rehabilitation component built in to the whole German notion of corrections.
It is not just a strong component. It is the reason for its very existence. And you see it when you speak to corrections administrators, and you see it when you speak to the officers, and you see it in every facet of life in prison in Germany.
But as you look at the prison system across the United States, say a Texas or a Louisiana, what would be the hardest nut to crack, the hardest challenge to try to begin that same level of experimentation and enthusiasm?
Let me say, you know, that we're seeing experimentation all over the country.
So my assumptions even there are beginning to be obsolete.
Well, but entirely understandable. You know, a lot of what people worry about in this moment, in this administration, where it seems like we've returned to the rhetoric of tough on crime and law and order and sort of a more punitive approach, is that that might be what's on the airwaves. But what is happening all over the country, because this the criminal justice system is 90% state and local, is that there are ambitious, you know, value-driven public leaders all over the country who are trying to do new things. So, you know, at Vera, we are working with 10 correctional administrators in states like Louisiana and Utah, and then also, you know, Minnesota and New Jersey. But they are all making a commitment to figure out how they can reduce the use of solitary confinement. They know that the systems have relied for too long on this as a disciplinary measure or as a punishment, and that it doesn't make people any better.
No, we've covered that. It's well known, and it's great to hear that realization is beginning to become programs in particular states.
And a real appetite for change. I mean, enough so that the way we've done things at Vera is that we now hold competitions and states apply. It's like a race to the top, and they compete to work with us so that they can make these changes. You know, I think that reform is really alive and well at the state and local level. But how does that happen at a much broader scale? And I think that's what I would describe as big, powerful drivers of the criminal justice system that we have now. The matter of racism, which is still to this day when there are many people in America who are persuaded to take a tough on crime approach and to vote for folks who pursue draconian sentences because their vision of dangerous people is a young black man. And that vision is something that has been nourished by the media and by politicians and by the rhetoric that politicians use, so that sort of racist and racialized instinct is, you know, still alive and well in many parts of America. And we have to come to terms with that. I mean, one of the things –
how do the Germans do it?
Well, you know, it's an interesting – you know, because they get the same thing. There are tabloids in Germany. There are – you know, there are people who have been released from prison who have done bad things, and that ends up in the press, and then people scream and shout and get mad, and, you know, and there are two things about Germany that are different. One is that prosecutors, corrections officials, they're all not elected. So they don't respond to the rage of the, you know,
moment.
Public in the moment in the same way that our elected officials tend to do. And then there's something in a way, you know, this peculiarly professional and, you know, in Germany, this commitment to craft and to the very seriousness of the work, so that this recognition that everything that they need to do is about helping people to succeed on the way out, and that if they haven't succeeded, then that's a failure for them to really reflect on.
It's separate, this idea of anger and the system that is going to
exactly
deal with criminals.
They'd
and,
say,
and
of,
success.
Of course people get angry. That's what people do. And of course the tabloids are going to write about it. But our job is to make sure that we can protect public safety. And the way we protect public safety is by doing everything we can to help that person succeed.
I wonder if you could take me through what you envision as we think about people really taking tangible steps that will get us excited and will communicate the idea that, hey, this is doable.
Right. Imagine this, a series of conversations with crime victims, with people who have been incarcerated, with corrections administrators, with corrections officers, with law enforcement, with advocates on the left and advocates on the right, essentially saying, if you had a chance to start anew, to start afresh and construct a system of criminal sanction, what would it look like, and what are the values that underlie it? Like, what's the very purpose of it? And so we're really trying to have those breakthrough conceptual conversations with all of these groups and people who are very concerned, I mean, who have a stake in the criminal justice system. And they are informing a vision that will really paint a picture for what this justice system and what prisons ought to look like, not tomorrow, but as a reference point in the future, you know, decades into the future. We've already decided that it's important for us to reduce the prison population, but now we have to think about the point of prison.
You know, just to push back, because this is a moment where we thought, you know, we were on the same page politically, and maybe we aren't so much. And the surprises of the November election suggest that, and you've alluded to some of those ideas already, suggest that there are people out there, well-meaning people out there, who would listen to this conversation and would go, look at that. There's the media just trying to be soft on criminals. And I've never been so infuriated in my life. What would you say to such a person, and what would you hope they might hear if they go out and rant in public about what they heard you talking about on this radio station?
You know, we have a system of justice to ensure safety for all of us. The question is, well, how does that system interact with people to maximize our collective safety? And what America and Americans have done is bought a bill of goods for the past few decades that long sentences, degradation, aggressive policing, and locking people up for long periods of time, that's what produces safety. And most people have bought it. The statistics tell you otherwise, and the evidence tells you otherwise. And so if you begin the conversation, say, look, so this should be a system that is going to deliver you and me maximum safety. What does it need to look like? And you follow what we know about what is not working with the system currently and what we know is working about other systems, then it leads to a conclusion that degradation and maltreatment and an excess of punishment is actually not serving us.
So you very quickly get to the point of, why not try something that's working, that's cheaper, and that you can see it working? And what would be so wrong with that?
Well, that's absolutely right. I mean, I think
– but how do you respond to the person that then says, hey, that may be the case, but crime feels bad to me and it makes me angry and I want those people to be hurt? How does that not contribute to public safety?
You know, what I've seen that's quite different than what I saw 5 years ago or 10 years ago is that leaders of big public agencies that are supposed to deliver public safety are now saying the public is asking me to do something different. They're asking me to reform my system. They're asking me to figure out how I can create program or policy that is actually going to produce a better outcome. And they're owning that in a way that is, you know, again, something that didn't exist 10 years ago or 20 years ago or and that wouldn't be rewarded. But now it's rewarded. So I do think that we are moving. It gets a little bit blotted out by the, you know, what's tweeted or what's said in the 24-hour news cycle. But
beneath the noise.
Beneath the noise.
Positive sounds.
Absolutely. One of the things that has been most powerful to me is that people who have been victims of violence, people who have survived crime, are becoming some of the most powerful voices for system reform, because they're saying, like, we've seen the history of this. We have seen what we have done over the past few decades, and locking people up for long periods of time isn't working. It's not making me any safer. I want a different kind of accountability. I want them to acknowledge that they've done something wrong, but I don't think prison is the answer. And we're seeing that all over the country. Absolutely. Progress beneath the noise.
Nick Turner is president and director of the Vera Institute of Justice. Nick, thanks so much.
John, thank you very much. It's been great to talk to you.
We'll bring you more on what people and institutions are doing to help reimagine prison tomorrow on The Takeaway.